Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Heal Your Trauma Drama Show. My name is Madeline Standing, and today we're going to be chatting with Melinda Walsh. Melinda is many things all rolled into one. She's been involved with feature films in the past. She has now begun to write a book called The Secrets of Wildly Successful Women. She's also creating an audio series and textbook where you can learn more about her there on her website at melindawalsh.com. That's Melinda, just how it's spelled on the screen here, melindawalsh.com. And Melinda's actually just joined us. How are you today, Melinda?
I am well today, Madeline. I am looking forward to talking with you
sound?
And sharing some ideas with our listeners. Yeah.
Great. How's the sound for you?
Sound is good. Is it okay for you?
You're coming out loud and clear, for sure. And I'm really enjoying looking at your website, the transformation with the lotus picture and and the download for the free audio meditation. That's new. I have not seen that. So congratulations on getting with that song and jiving with that. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
Today, as you know, we're chatting about how to successfully free ourselves of victim thinking. And as I look online and I look at, for instance, if you Google victim, there are three different definitions. And, one of them saying that it's a person who is harmed, injured, or killed as a result of crime, accident, or other event or action. Now, I know we're all thankfully alive as we listen to this, so we might not fall into some of those categories. I'm surprised because the kind of definition that I think of, and I think that you think of, when we think of victim, it's not listed when you Google victim. The second one is, it says a person who is tricked or duped. And then it has synonymous for a sucker. And then the last one is a living creature killed as a religious sacrifice. So I know these are true words for some of us, and it's certainly not pleasant words. And I want you to know right now that this is not what we're exploring today. We're exploring what it's like to free ourselves of self-imposed limitations that we can do as human beings, no matter how great of a thinker we may be beneath that. Sometimes we live in a bit of a shadow of yesteryear or yesterday. So I want to open the floor to you to say hello to all of us and share anything that comes to mind for you and perhaps even your own definition of victim.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, hello, everybody. I am really glad to be here today. Madeline and I have gotten to know each other over the last few months because of a common course that we are taking about how to bring forth some of our own talents and abilities. And that my work in teaching the secrets of wildly successful women has really dovetailed, I think, very well with some of yours, Madeline, in that in some ways we treat ourselves as victims. We pretend that we are victims, and that is kind of at the core of my work. My background is as a marketer. I've been in the advertising, marketing, and also film, television and radio production industries for quite a while. And central to the core of that feel that industry really is how to tell a story. And one of my early trainings was to how to tell the story of a business in 30 or 60 seconds in a radio or a television commercial. And so that inspired me to really learn to capture the key elements of a story. What are the relevant elements out of all of the possible pieces of information that we have? What are the real drivers? What are the core elements of stories? And as I began to my professional experience, as I was right out of college, in college and right out of it, I also realized that the idea of consciously writing a story and boiling it down to its most critical elements is what our life is all about. Now, let me explain a little bit about what I mean by that. We live in a story that we tell ourselves about what happens to us in life. And it's that story that drives us. It drives our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs, our actions, certainly. And it happens as a result of our trying to make sense of what happens to us in life. If we have something traumatic, whether it's physically traumatic or emotionally traumatic, we attempt to come up with a story that makes it make sense. And depending on our culture, our background, our raising, two people can have the exact same experience and have two completely different stories about it. So that is a topic of immense interest to me. And it's part of my mission is to help other people wake up to the story that we live in. And most people, probably a good 95% of the population, do that unconsciously. Now, the way that we find out what our story is, there's a number of ways, you know, to do it. But mostly the one thing that I look to is, what am I telling myself about any given situation? You know, how am I talking to myself? And there's a loudspeaker in our head that just plays constantly. And if you're listening to this broadcast today, you have a commentary about what Madeleine and I are saying. And you may be thinking about the definitions of victims that Madeleine just read. My idea of a victim is someone that has not yet realized that our life is under our direction. And what I mean by that is that we may not always have control over what happens to us, over the situation. We certainly don't have control over other people. But what we do have is command of our own responses to any given situation. So you can be in a car accident, and certainly that's a pretty traumatic situation, and you can say you have a choice on some level as to how you respond to that. You can say, okay, I didn't like this. This is not what I had in my plan. Let me embrace physical therapy. Let me do what I can to be proactive to heal this and get myself back on track. Or you might can tell yourself a story that, oh my goodness, this is the most horrible thing that ever happened to me. And you may tell the story of your accident in a way that gets other people to feel sorry for you and do things for you that you might be capable of doing for yourself, but it just feels a little better to have other people do it for you. So the way we respond to things is completely under our control. Are you relating to what I'm saying, Madeleine? In some of your work?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that when people create that story, it not only disempowers them, but it displaces the connection that we normally have with humanity. That means, you know, our neighbors, our friends, our family. Because when we're at our best, when we're in a proactive mindset of how can I integrate each one of these experiences that I've just had by beginning to take small steps of action or sometimes monumental steps, like going to get that physical therapy after, you know, this hypothetical accident that we're speaking of, or for mm-hmm. some of us, there was an accident. And I think that when we can start to narrate our story, as you're saying, from a more constructive viewpoint, then it heightens our connection to our positive personal power and our connection with others as a result. So I wonder, in what ways, Melinda, are we unconsciously limiting ourselves?
Yeah, I think it's a very weighty question, Madeleine. We unconsciously limit ourselves every time we say a justification or an excuse for not doing something. Oh, I couldn't possibly do that. I'm too old. I'm too young. I haven't had the training. I don't have the education. Every time we make an excuse for not doing something, we are dismissing our own power and our own ability to jump in and handle life. I see this occasionally with some of my workshop participants who may be, let's say, 35 plus 40 maybe, who might be coming out of a relationship, a long-term relationship, or a marriage or a partnership, and they're reluctant to get back into the dating pool. Oh, I couldn't do that. No, I'm just not ready. I don't like those dating sites. You know, bad things can happen. You can meet creeps. Well, all of that is an excuse that puts the limits firmly in place. One of my friends used to say, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours. And so we have to be careful what we claim, you know, because it does, our words have power, our story has power. Whatever follows the words I am will come looking for us. It becomes a part of our personal identity, our personal story. And what we want to do, in my opinion, as human beings together on planet Earth, is to become aware of these stories and to really step out in courage and vulnerability and be willing to burrow down into what's behind those excuses. And I can think of two cases with some workshop participants that they were, oh, I can't date. No, I'm not ready to do that. No, that I had a bad experience, that's not going to work for me. And what they were really saying was, I don't want to be hurt again. I'm a little self-conscious. These were women in their 40s. One was almost 50. I'm a little self-conscious that I don't look the way that I did in my 20s and 30s when I was first in my relationship. And so they were a little self-conscious about how their bodies had changed as they had aged. And so they
I
want to
stick with, if it's okay,
sure.
When you said that we have a fear intrinsically as human beings, you know, on this planet, of being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a core part of victim thinking.
Yes.
That if we follow that narrative, it's so natural to think in human and welcomed and embraced, hopefully, by our dearest loved ones, if we were to share that, you know, oh, I'm feeling really vulnerable right now, or I'm really scared of being hurt again.
Yes.
And beyond that, though, how can we shift? I want to explore that a bit about how do we stop that narrative and then start to say, you know, I know, you know what, one foot in, then the next step, then the next step. I actually do want to explore. I do want to embrace this opportunity to try something new. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the keys, if I could just start with an idea, is that we take away the expectation. So we take away that life-limiting expectation. So therefore, it lessens the pressure that we're putting on ourselves to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
If we approach it with a playful, sporadic, fun, but conscious place of, this is a choice. I'm allowing myself to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you articulated that beautifully. Go ahead.
Thanks, Melinda.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So if someone comes to you and they say, I'm really scared of being hurt, what is a springboard thought that can help someone transition from that fearful, constricted place to an opening? Can you think of a thought?
Yeah. The first thing is, there are no guarantees in life. No one has, it's impossible for someone, even if you love them dearly, to promise, I will never hurt you. There's no insurance against being hurt. And that may sound kind of counterintuitive to embrace that, but it helped me when I was going through that process myself to realize, okay, there's nothing I can do enough to prevent myself from ever being hurt. And so once I recognized that, I quit resisting that. I quit trying to come up with defenses that would protect me from being hurt. And at the same time, I realized that part of why I really cultivated defenses against being hurt, which also, not coincidentally, disconnected me from other people, was that I didn't trust myself to be able to tolerate the feelings of hurt in a way that I could manage. I didn't trust myself to be able to handle whatever situation, whatever would happen after I might have been vulnerable or exposed something that was near and dear to my heart. And the way that I got through this, and this is what I would offer to any listener, is to lead with your vulnerability. And that may be absolutely terrifying, but leading with your vulnerability can be something as simple as, I'm feeling vulnerable right now talking about this, and I'm a little scared, and it feels awkward to say this, but I really wish that you wouldn't do X or whatever. And I am a big believer in being kind with our words to everyone. It's funny, I was thinking about this. I was talking about this with my husband yesterday. I think people get into trouble when they have an issue that comes up for them. That's in relationship with someone else. But what happens is our defenses and our fears of being hurt lead us to handle it in a way that then becomes the secondary problem, and it gets the problem off of the original issue. So if I have an
it's
issue...
It's almost like triangulating.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like triangulating where we introduce a third person. Let's say we have an issue with some particular someone's behavior, and then we introduce a third person to help us to not feel so vulnerable, maybe. And in this sense, it's a proactive, I'm hearing that there is a segue of a proactive way of triangulating, where we're introducing a new narrative, engaging that, being proactive in our language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so go ahead. I stepped in. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. And this is a practice. This is not something that is easily accessible in our culture. the news media certainly does not foster this. We live in a culture of positionality, where one party gets in one corner and the other party gets in another corner and tries to make each other wrong. You know, everybody thinks they're right, and then they try to make somebody else wrong. And so we absorb that. We don't have a lot of really healthy, loving models as to how to navigate, you know, through something that may be feeling a little vulnerable. Well, let's say, for example, that every time, let's say that you and I we live in the same town. We don't, listeners, but let's say that we did, and that when you and I made plans to get together, you were, 9 out of 10 times you would be late with no call. And Madeline's very punctual. I want to say that this is a hypothetical situation. I'm making this up as an example. And so after a little bit of this, I start to get a little irritated, because I'm punctual. And so I'm having to wait. And so the issue is Madeline's lack of punctuality is causing me distress. And so that's the issue. And that's a legitimate issue. Wouldn't you say, if you have two people that are trying to be at a certain place at a certain time, there is a negotiation that goes along that leads to an agreement that says, yes, we will be there at a certain time. But what if, Madeline, how would it feel to you if I came to you and said, Madeline, you are always late. What's wrong with you? How could you are never on time. You are the laziest, you know, most irresponsible person I have ever seen in my life. What would your natural response be?
I would think that in your mind, that I had done something terrible to you. And I wouldn't know how to change that or how to get you to maybe consider that my actions didn't have anything to do with you to start. And then I would feel really frustrated because I wouldn't potentially know how to break that. And I think that frustration is a human feeling that is natural, and it's all about how we deal with that. So from there, I might ask if we could just pause for a moment and just acknowledge that we both care about one another and our friendship, so we probably don't want to be attacking one another. Or, you know, rather than saying the word attacking, because then again, that's the implication. This is where we get in the iffy zone, because there's the implication that was Melinda's intent. And it had nothing to do with that. She has something going on her end in this hypothetical situation. So I think that, I mean, the natural response would be frustration for a lot of us. And then moving beyond that, it's all about, for me, I'm big on the pause. That's one of my personal practices, and one of my teachings is just pause, because when we don't pause, we're running on that habitual cycle of thinking that takes us down the same narrow, limited pathways of thought and living that we've navigated time and time before. And that's not something that, you know, we want to be able to free ourselves of that. So past the pause, what do you think we might do to liberate ourselves from that moment of, whether we want to call it, you know, an attack or not, but
it was an attack,
a moment of projecting. And at the same time, I like to be really careful with language, because I know that if this were a real situation, your intent may or may not be to attack me. It might just be that you're also frustrated.
That's how frustration can often sound as a defense against being hurt, believe it or not. That was an attack. Sometimes people live in a story that says, I don't want to be hurt, So I'm going to get you before you can get me. Instead of really owning the hurt that says, that might sound something like this, Madeleine, being on time is really important to me, and I'm a little hurt. The story in my head says I'm a little hurt because it comes across to me like you don't value my time, and therefore I don't feel important to you. And that's a little hurt, and that makes me sad. So language like that really is owning your vulnerability, is saying, learning to speak, I'm a little hurt. The first step is learning to identify, oh, this is hurt feeling. This isn't frustration. Underneath frustration is very often hurt, anger, sadness, fear, and we have learned, techniques, defenses, that we're going to get the other person before they can get us. And sometimes we want to design a conversation that lets them know just how hurt we are by hurting them to the degree that we're hurt. So your question was, how do we get out of that? And I think you gave a beautiful example that says, let's take a pause. And you can learn to, when someone comes at you and they're clearly frustrated, you can just say that, hey, you sound really frustrated that I was late. Because very often, our initial knee-jerk response is to defend back and attack back. Well, you never returned my texts, you know, when I was trying to text you. Hey, so don't go calling me irresponsible, you know. So, and then next time.
And then check that out, too. And then check out, you know, you sound frustrated. Are you frustrated? Give them an opportunity to own what it is, or to put a different label on it. They might want to put a different label on it. And you know, Melinda, you shared something with us that is a shining gem amongst all the other pearls of wisdom here, and that is, you know, part of freeing ourselves of victim thinking is not having to be right. So we're choosing to let go of being right or wrong, and that other party being right or wrong, especially ourselves, and especially other people. And that's what you introduced a few moments back. And you also said something. You made me feel blank. And that's something you and I, in the best of my recollection, have chatted about before. Mm-hmm. And I do believe we've also chatted about maybe doing a show about that or introduce it into our 7-week program that's coming up shortly here in 2015.
Yes.
So that's just the sparkling moments here of greatness. Thank you for sharing everything that you have today.
You're
welcome. It feels like we just started. And it's already time.
This is a rich topic, isn't it?
It is. So I invite you to go to Melinda Walsh's website because you can get a free downloadable audio that is a meditation right at her homepage, right smack there at the bottom right side. So it's Melinda Walsh, MelindaWalsh.com. So just go to the bottom right-hand side where it says news and events, and please take advantage of Melinda's free audio meditation. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about our 7-week program, you can go to HealYourTraumaDrama.com, also soon to be ConquerTraumaDrama.com. So try both of those links out and listen to more of our shows at HealYourTraumaDrama.tumblr.com, TUMBLR.com. Au revoir, Melinda. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.